conservative, Christian, mother, wife, Air Force veteran, gun rights advocate.
This is Stacy on the Right. Here's your host, Stacy Washington.
Oh, yeah. Stacy on the Right here on SiriusXM's Patriot Channel. All of the best talk in the evening. Okay. Thank you so much for being with us. You can find out more at stacyontheright.com, familyvisionmedia.org. Let's welcome in our next guest. We have Stephen Rabb, author of the critically acclaimed and best-selling book, The Founder's Speech to a Nation in Crisis. Stephen, as I understand it, leftists really think we should abolish the Constitution. I disagree. Your book actually explains why.
It does, Stacy. That's what the book is about. It is a reminder to us, all us Americans, who care about this country, of what the ethos, the principles upon which this country was founded. So the whole idea of the book is if the founding fathers came back right now to America and gathered together and wrote a single speech to America, what would they say in that speech? What would the founding fathers say to us right now? And the book is that speech, and it's taken from their own words, not what Stephen Rabb thinks they would say, but what do they actually say about these various topics? Because they spoke on things that we don't even realize they said. So I wanted to bring that to light, bring it together into a speech. It's all hemmed together in a narrative form so it flows, and it's been well received. People like it. It has over 1,000 five-star reviews, and people like the book because it's what they know intrinsically, but it says it. It's right there in their own voice, a speech to America.
So when speaking about the Constitution, some people's eyes can get glazed over. They've heard a lot of conservatives kind of wax poetic about it, but it's not very real to them. How do you bring the Constitution back as something that people actually want to talk about and to listen to people talk about?
Well, I think it starts with human nature. It's a conversation about human nature. And what do I mean by that? So I think if there's anything we should understand, even before we dig into the Constitution, we have to understand the nature of humanity. We are flawed. We are sinned creatures that, given to our own device, we would all be tyrants. And John Adams says it. He says all men would be tyrants if they could. And he goes then into describing what's in our nature that makes us that way. And if the founders knew anything, then they knew a lot. They understood human nature. They knew history. They'd seen how time and again, human nature had led people to become tyrants, to destroy, to conquer one nation, that even those who we had hoped for as leaders would acquire the power and soon would want more power, and it's just built into the character of mankind. So when we get in touch with our nature and who we are as people, then we say, okay, well, I need boundaries. You need boundaries. Every person needs to construct boundaries in their own life. And a nation needs boundaries. The rulers of that nation need boundaries. And so if you think of the Constitution just as setting up the boundaries by which we can operate so that we can have people do the good work that must be done for a country, but know when to stop, know when that there's a limit, that this is your role. It's a defined role. It's an enumerated power that's in the Constitution. Here's where it says what you can do, and you can do no more. And everything else, everything that's not in this document, then goes to the states or goes to the people. 10th Amendment, all the things that are not enumerated by the Constitution itself belong in the states and to us, the people, because the founders believed that the closer it was to the people, the things that concern the people should be near the people, should be controlled by the people, and that happens in states and in communities.
So the states and communities are, well, the states are the labs of democracy. That's what the founders called them.
That's it.
And so we have these places where, like right now, after the Dobbs decision, you have some states that are literally, they call themselves abortion sanctuaries. And you have other states that are, they're abortion free. And these are intentional actions that states are taking. And so there's kind of an idea around you know, making some kind of national legislation on abortion, and the left wants to do it so they can reverse the Dobbs decision, and the right wants to do it to basically protect the Dobbs decision, but in a more meaningful way. Should it be left alone at this point because of the democracies, the labs of democracy, or should it be that, you know, people should continue to push for even more, you know, kind of like dividing lines on this?
Well, I actually think you can make a case for both. I think you can make a case that there are federal laws around murder, and that if you believe abortion is murder, which we do, then you can make the case for a federal law there. There's also the Federalist case for it belonging in the states, that the states are where things concerning the people belong, and there's nothing that concerns the people more than the issue of life. And so I think practically, when you're debating those two sides of that coin, I think practically we should fall right now on the idea that states is the best place for this to play out, that we should, state by state, let that laboratory of democracy play out. Let us find the best ways to tell this story, to come to terms with this. And I think that not just on the issue of abortion, but frankly, all the issues that are fluxing our nation, we should generally move forward with the idea that the federal government has messed that issue up. They have not done it well. They've stretched well beyond their boundaries. Let's put that back into the states. Let these laboratories, these innovators take place. Let's find best practices. Let's understand how best to do that. And then others will adopt, and we will learn best, and we will grow better that way. So I think just under the idea that we ought to allow these states to do their thing, and it's happening right now. You just described it, and it's happening right now. Let's let them and let this play out, and then let's learn from it as we go. I could make the same argument on the other side of it, and yet, you know, I make this case that, but in blue states, it's going to mean this, this, and this. And that's true. And I wish there was a clean answer to say, yes, we should have a federal ban down to 0 weeks at a federal level. I think that morally aligns with what I believe. But do I believe that's practically, that it's the art of the doable? Can we actually get that done right now? That's not in our next two or three steps. So what is within our next two or three steps is to make it happen at the state level.
So at the state level is also where you can help women who are abortion-minded make a more informed decision. So I think, you know, I agree with you. I personally, I'm so pro-life. I would love nationwide legislation, but it would have the same effect that the Roe v. Wade decision had. It mobilized hundreds of thousands of people to fight for, you know, 49 years to reverse it. I think legislation to the other end would have the same impact, but state by state legislation means you have people at the national level fighting to force states to do things that they don't want to do. And people are very territorial about their states, where when it's national legislation or it's something that's in the Constitution, it's a much different conversation. So I think that's right. Although, you know, anybody who has been listening to me for years would say, wait, what? You don't want federal legislation to make sure that people can't have abortions? And I'm thinking, yeah, what did I just say? So, okay. But I do, I agree with you.
I know we are pulled. Here's a good analogy that works in my mind on that. And that is that if federal government is the big gun that we fight for, and we have got to be careful that when we just want the federal government to be our bully but we want to cram down now. We want the federal government to be the 400-pound gorilla in the room and say, this is it for everyone. We have to be careful because we're playing into that exact same mentality that the left operates by, and that is everything happens at the federal level. The states have next to no role. And everything does get crammed down. So if we're going to be consistent, then we ought to say that we have to win hearts and minds at the state level. We have to win this state by state, and we have to make the case in the state. And I ultimately believe if we just generally have the philosophy that we're going to focus on empowering the states and pulling the plug on this enormous federal government, that ultimately the red states, and you're seeing it already, the massive migration of people from New York to Florida, from California to Texas, you see that move because they look across and they say, now that's a state that's winning, that's pro-business, that's pro-life, that is doing, you know, pro-family. I want to live in a state like that. I think that's the best way, is to create red states that are thriving. And in those red states, we're going to draw the people. We're going to then acquire more and more influence because as the population of red states grows and the blue states, then we'll learn from their mistakes, their painful mistakes. Or if they don't, they will just simply fail.
I'm only laughing because we don't see Democrats learning from their mistakes now.
No,
so
we don't. No,
might
we don't.
Be unlikely.
That is wishful as wishful.
Might be unlikely, but you know what? People change. I mean, anything's possible. This is America. Anything's possible. But I do love that because we know the pandemic taught Americans a lot of things. I feel like maybe 40 or 50 million people grew up during the pandemic. I don't mean they were babies or children then. I mean that there were 48 to 50 million adult Americans who'd been living in an alternative reality here in this country, and the pandemic woke them up, shook that reality off of them. And when they saw the truth, where they were living, what the people who were in charge of them, because, you know, you have public servants, then you have people who are in charge of you. If you live in a Democrat state, those people are in charge of you. If you live in a Republican state, they're at least somewhat your public servant. Depends on a lot of things, if they're really truly serving you or if they're serving themselves and you just happen to be nearby and you can get some crumbs.
Right.
So, you know, but the point is, at least there's some semblance of public service going on in a Republican state, where these blue states, it's tyranny, and it's just waiting to come out and literally glom onto you and pin you down to the ground and keep you there. People grew up to that, and they moved for freedom. And so when you say people will move for, you know, to get away from paying for other people's abortions, or to go to a place where they can own a firearm and protect themselves, or to go to a place where the police are still fully funded and crime is lower.
Right.
Or a
right.
place where they don't have taxes on every single thing coming and going. And I live in a red state and we're taxed out of the wazoo here, but it's not as bad as California. I'm still ahead of the Californians and New Yorkers and New Jerseyans. You know, I'm behind the people in Tennessee and North Dakota and South Dakota. I mean, I know where I am on the list, but I'm ahead of a whole lot of states when it comes to taxes, but I don't like what we have going on here. But we know if we move, we're only moving to a state that has better taxation than what we have now. And that's something that we, you know, you kind of figure it out. If you care about taxes, if you look at how much you're paying and you're like, this looks ridiculous, then you start to kind of look around and say, where is it less ridiculous? So you're right. There is an amazing opportunity for Americans to kind of pick and choose. And then those states become more populous, and by the very nature of that, become more influential. And then other states would have to then emulate some of those policies in order to get the people back. Now, Gavin Newsom says people are moving because of Trump's horrible H-1B-1 visa policies, his horrible visa policies. They're not leaving because his state has high taxation and high crime. He's delusional, but everybody else, right?
Right. Well, that's right. And they're always to the bitter end going to have 1,000 excuses as to why their policies fail. But I do think we're getting to it, because if we want to restore that 10th Amendment, the idea that all the things that pertain to the people, the lives of the people, belong in the states, that's a lot. That's a lot that's currently sitting in Washington, D.C., being run poorly, right? And the problem with Washington, D.C. is they don't learn from their mistakes. I mean, you've got a monopoly, so it's kind of like having one big restaurant in your downtown. If you have one restaurant in town and there's no other restaurants, that's where everybody eats. First of all, it's going to be a terrible restaurant because there's no competition, no reason for them to get better. And second of all, after a while, nobody in the community is even going to know it's a terrible restaurant because it's the only restaurant they've had for years and years. And the problem we have is that this federal government is the only restaurant we have, and it's run terribly. It's because there is no innovation. When programs fail, there's no changes. They just double down on the funding of that program. And you know this. And the only way to change that is to say, we're going to take these programs, block grant them to the state. The state can then decide, can innovate and create, and we will learn how to best do Medicaid in this state, if we do it at all, or if we change this program here, we change that program here. That's how states will improve these failing and flawed programs. Many of them will say, yep, we need that, but we need it to be closer to the people. We need it to be operated in communities. We need it to be run by states, and we need to learn from each other how to best make these programs succeed or make them go away. And that's the lack of competition that we have. It means the lack of innovation, which means we just watch bad programs get worse and nothing ever happens. And it's because it all sits in this big blob we call the federal government.
And that blob, it's kind of a dangerous blob. It's the worst.
It is. It's a creeping blob. Wasn't there a movie? Was it called The Blob? Is that what it was?
Yeah, but you know what I'm thinking of that's a little more recent, Stephen? I'm thinking of Nanny McPhee, where the British one, where it's Emma Thompson, and she comes in and she says, when you want me, I'll have to leave, but when you don't want me, I'll have to stay. And so they pretend to be sick. So she comes upstairs and she has a bowl of this. It's supposed to put meat on your bones, and the cook has made it in the kitchen. And after Nanny McPhee gets done carrying it upstairs, it's actually a moving, like it's moving. So she takes a spoonful of that out and says, you have to take this. You won't feel better until you take this. Because they're pretending to be sick, but all of a sudden they're really sick. And so, of course, you know, she's using magic and all that. She pulls a spoon of it out, and it's wriggling and jiggling on its own. It's brown and it's like alive in that spoon. And they're terrified, but they have to take a spoonful of it. They have to like gulp that down. And when they do, they look positively green. And so that's what the government blob is like. And if you work for the federal government out there in listener land, and you're thinking, you know, that's a really terrible thing to say, I'm sorry. This isn't personal. It's not about personal workers in the government. We're talking about the power of the federal government. Look at the way they're chasing after Donald Trump. They're using the government to do that. The government and lawfare. These are things that frighten people. The government's too powerful when it can take any person down, and they only want to make it stronger. Democrats want to hire more IRS agents and strengthen parts of the government that the parts we don't like the IRS. They want to strengthen the parts. They don't want to strengthen the parts we like the park system. They're strengthening the parts we're afraid of, like the IRS. So there's something to that analogy of it being the blob. It is.
And it creeps and it gets larger and larger and never gets smaller. And it does. It eats our lives, because all this freedom, every time it gets bigger, we get smaller, right? Our freedoms are taken away incrementally, gradually. And that's in the book. It's amazing how much the founders predicted so many elements, the creeping nature of government, that if you're not careful, the federal government will take over all the elements of the country, of society. And they say it so beautifully and so powerfully, and that's why I wrote the founder's speech to a nation in crisis, is to remind people that this is not the federal government that the founders intended, that they specifically framed it with limitations, with the massive role for states, a significant role for states that was clearly defined as well, and that we have run past those boundaries, kicked down those fences, and it's time for us to stand up those fences again, to remind ourselves of who we are as Americans, and to live by the ethos and the ideals that the founding fathers put in place. And if we just start there, what a difference, what a turnaround it would be for our country.
And I think that sounds fun, because whether we like it or not, I've seen enough stories, especially on Twitter for a while, people who moved from New York to Florida, they would get in these threads and they'd say, wow, I'm in Florida and nobody's wearing a mask, or I'm in Florida, my kids are going to school. And they keep coming home and asking me things about, you know, everyone here just plays outside. Can I go outside? You know, I was like reading these thinking, it really is different. If you live in New York, you don't let your kids go play outside. You know, they don't play outside by themselves. But if you live in Florida, kids play outside in their neighborhood. And kids who aren't used to that, they're going to ask questions about it. And so I was reading those kinds of things, and it was on the regular basis, like during the big shift when people were moving across the country. people were having the same experience in Arizona. I remember in the comment thread on some interior design. So this is a Instagrammer who she most of her account is about interior design. And another lady who just moved to Iowa. She said, we moved to Iowa from the East Coast. She said, we've never been happier. It's so slow here. And there's so like just regular people. And she said, everything is so cheap. She said, I feel like I've died and gone to suburban heaven, only I think I'm rural. I'm not even sure where I am. I just know I'm never leaving. And I was reading that and thinking, you know, the pandemic has opened up doors for people to see themselves living places they never would have because they went remote, right? And I know the pandemic was not this way for everyone. There were people who suffered. There are people who still haven't recovered from it. So I'm not trying to say it was, you know, it was not great for everyone. But there are some horizons that have been broadened because of it. And I just hope that we can continue that. And I think your book, The Founder's Speech to a Nation in Crisis, I think the thing that makes this so special is it's kind of the same aspect that the Bible has, where it doesn't matter what part of the Bible you're reading, it has some part of it that's applicable to today. You can read Philemon, which is about an escaped slave who stole from his master. And the book of Philemon, which is just one letter, it's one chapter. There are myriad parallels to our society today. And I think the founders were able to take that timeless quality of the Bible, and they were able to put that into a document that is it's the foundation of what we have here. It's the reason why I can sit here, descended from slaves on one side of my family, you know, in a little house. I'm at home in the Midwest. I'm broadcasting through Washington, D.C. and New York and, you know, satellites up in space and talking to you. And I just happen to be Black, you know, so I'm all of the things that were barriers 100 years ago are completely obliterated through technology and the advancement of our society. And the founders knew that was going to happen. They knew that there'd be more advanced weapons than muskets. They knew that there would be more advanced technologies than the printing press. And they accounted for that by making a timeless document. And I really feel like we don't appreciate it. We don't appreciate it enough.
You're absolutely right, Stacey. I mean, it was the pivot of mankind. It was the first time in world history that we had the idea that all people are created equal. I mean, we take it for granted now. It was not a thing. That was not the general ethos of the world. It was a caste system. It was a ranking from civilizations and otherwise. And so the idea that they created a paper that would put the power in the hands of the people, and then they defined the people as being all the people. Now, it took us as a country a long time to get there. It took us a long time to experience and fulfill it. But isn't that the way we work? I mean, don't we establish goals and visions and dreams for ourselves that we are not there yet? I mean, isn't that how humanity is that we create a vision for what we can be, and then we aspire to that, and then we work towards that. Sometimes people just expect, okay, they just could have snapped their fingers and pivoted that day to change their world and everyone around them in an instant. And that's not the way life works, the world works. But what they did do is put ideas in place that ultimately the whole world today emulates. Where there's liberty, where there's freedom, where there's free markets, where there's wealth, that is because of the rule of law, the Constitution, and that was really created for the first time in America at scale, and ultimately went across the globe and changed all of humanity. And so, yes, we should. Do I believe we should celebrate the founding fathers? I do. That's what the book is about. It's a celebration of the founding. It is the counter narrative of the 1619 Project, and it's meant to say, yes, do we have things we look back and say, wow, that was an awful part of our history. But that we thankfully, thank God, all overcame that together. Together, we overcame that as a people. And shouldn't we say, thank God for that?
We should. We should not only say thank God for it, but thank God that, you know, the silver lining in a pandemic is that maybe people will pay a little bit more attention to how their elected officials adhere to the Constitution. I think the book is a must read, and I'm looking at it. I love to go to Amazon first because that's my favorite thing. I published my book. I self-published it, but I went first to Amazon because it's the best place to put your books. And so yours, The Founder's Speech to a Nation in Crisis, What the Founders Would Say to America Today, it was released October 15th of 2020. It's a number one bestseller in general elections and political process. And I love the cover. It has the founders on there. You have it on Kindle, audiobook, hardcover, and paperback. It says free delivery by Thursday, September 29th. Fastest delivery is Monday, September 26th, if I order in 1 hour and 36 minutes. So it says great on Kindle, great experience, great value. Wonderful to have you here to talk about it. The link is at the show notes for anybody who's driving. You can just go to stacyontheright.com, click the link. It takes you right to Amazon to buy the book. Stephen Rabb, thank you, sir.
Thank you, Stacey.
All right. Have a wonderful weekend. 866-957-2874. Another new segment for you. We are going to be going through a Good News Friday roundup on the other side of this break. Stay there.